All right, guys, welcome to Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 34. It is Friday, February 26th, 11 a.m. Pacific time. How's it going, Deborah?
It's going pretty well. How's it going,
America's
Adam?
Back, baby! We're back! Oh, God. Airstrikes on Syria, on Iranian targets. So we're getting two of them, two birds with one stone. They've wanted it forever and ever. How do you feel? You voted for it.
I did. I voted for Biden.
Yeah. How many babies do you think they've killed so far?
I hope zero.
That's not accurate.
Well, what do you think is accurate? And
more than should be dead.
Well, zero should be dead. So,
yeah.
But
it only took them a month, huh? Month and a couple days, and we're back messing around even more in the Middle East, turning sand into glass, as they like to say. I think that was Dick Cheney who said that. Any thoughts? Do you feel responsible? Do you feel like some of the blood is on your hands?
No, I can't feel that way.
Do you feel that you endorse it through your vote for Joe Biden's administration, though?
No. I did endorse his administration by voting for him, and I still feel like the lesser of two evils was where my vote went. I don't feel good about this at all.
What do you think's more evil? Mean tweets or killing babies?
I don't know how you want me to answer that. I mean, obviously mean tweets, but that's not all Trump stood for.
You just said mean tweets are more evil than killing babies?
No, I meant the reverse.
I don't know, Deborah. That might have been Freudian.
No, I'm not that deep.
Okay. Well, I think everyone that voted for Joe Biden is complicit. I think if you voted for Donald Trump, you would have been complicit in all the babies that he was killing too. So, you know, it just kind of sucks that we had managed to kind of stay out of Syria and Iran for the most part. But if you look back through history, Hillary Clinton and the neocons and the neoliberals have wanted Iran forever, and looks like their dreams are coming true. So we'll see what happens. But we're back, as Joe Biden likes to say, America's back. So we did not get any emails, I don't believe, since the last show. We got a nice donation from Anthony again. So
thank you, Anthony. Thank you so much.
Kind of paid in the, used the payment plan, but he's to the point where he will be the executive producer for this show.
Very good.
We also got a really nice donation from our friend Chef Matt in New Hampshire from the Resistance Chronicle podcast.
All right.
He sent me a bunch of a really good donation, really nice, generous donation of Ravencoin, our first crypto donation.
Uh-huh.
So he had a guy on his podcast from the Free State Project in New Hampshire who is a big advocate for this new coin called Ravencoin, and it's based off of Ethereum. And I now hold some. And
what's Ethereum?
Ethereum is like the second most well-known cryptocurrency behind Bitcoin.
Okay.
So and it's been going crazy. I started buying it when it was $90, and today it's worth $1,500. So it had been up near $2,000, but everything's kind of gone down the past few days, but we're still doing real well. I've been trying to buy some more of it, more of the Ravencoin. but the wallet I have isn't letting me exchange Bitcoin for it. So if anybody's listening and having the same issues or knows what I can do to make it work, let me know. So last week we were on Nowhere to Go But Up podcast, and I think Sean Dustin posted it up on the internet, so you can go to listen to that. It's me and Deborah. And then Monica Perez, I was on the Monica Perez show on for last Saturday, and I think she's posting that episode today. And on last Friday, I was on the Resistance Chronicle podcast with my friend Matt and his co-host, and that episode has been up for a while, so you can go and listen to me, and one of them has me and Deborah on it, on all three of those podcasts if you want. So yeah, what's going on with you, Deborah?
We're moving into the red tier.
What does that mean? We don't have tiers here, I don't think.
We were on purple, which was the most strict, the most limiting, and now we're on red, which means that you can go into different restaurants, my gym, with a reduced number of people, I think like 25%.
You can eat in a restaurant?
Yeah.
Got it. But you walk to the table with a mask, but then yes, you can take it off to eat?
Yes, I'm sure that's what it is, yeah.
Do midgets have to wear masks in the restaurant?
If they have a nose and a mouth and a breathing system, yes, they do have to wear a mask.
But they're at the level, below the level of where you would be if you were sitting down without a mask on.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be discriminatory against small people?
To make them not wear masks?
Uh-huh.
No, I think that would be not, that would be the opposite of discrimination. That would be a benefit. It would be an extra right that they have. I think your reasoning's a little off in this episode so far, Deborah.
Snap out of it.
What else is going on? Let's see. Yeah, not much is going on up here. I don't know. I think we can go eat at restaurants. I don't really do any of that because I don't really care to go out in public anymore. But yeah, it's nice. I'm working in downtown Portland and we don't have to wear masks on the job. So that's good. And I was leaving the parking garage where I've been parking, which is totally empty. In downtown Portland, and the lady said that I had to wear a mask to check out. And I said no. And she said, okay, then if you come back and say that next time, we're not going to serve you. So I don't park there anymore. So I voted with my dollars. And yeah, they won't get my $14 a day. So hopefully they go bankrupt because of it. And yeah, I don't know. What are you, you still reading books?
Mm-hmm.
What are you reading?
pardon me. I just finished one that I was reading for entertainment called Mexican Gothic.
Oh, right. You told us about that one. The Danielle Steele one.
It's not Danielle Steele, but... and so then I picked up Pale Horse Rider again.
Oh, cool. How far are you into that one?
Not very. I had to kind of start over because I had let it go for a while.
So you're on the part where they're talking about his UFO era. That's like kind of the first part of the book. They talk about him kind of like his military career.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's, he wasn't a, it's good. It just shows you kind of a more broad picture of what Bill Cooper was like. And I don't know. It doesn't seem like he wasn't all he was cracked up to be by a lot of people who haven't really researched him. And Mark Jacobson did a good job on that book. So go get it, read it, and tell us what you think. What else have
you been reading? What are you reading right now?
Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon.
Oh, that was a killer book.
Yeah, I'm I'm in the first 60 pages and it's just like telling stories of everyone that lived in, I think everyone that lived in Laurel Canyon in the 60s died tragically somehow. That's crazy.
A lot of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Car crash, overdose, suicide, murder.
Disillusion. Disillusionment.
Yeah.
Ruined my youth.
Yeah. Yeah. I really want to find out some, I need to do some research or find somebody that has done some research on the kind of the same thing, but in the punk rock movement. And I don't hold any reservations that any of those people that I looked up to were good people, but I really enjoy their music. Luckily, I can separate something that goes into my ears and sounds cool from the person that made it, you know? Like mm-hmm. my favorite band, I won't name them because it'll get me in trouble, but they're like the most evil, horrible people of all, you know? So, but they make
evil,
awesome.
Evil like they are. They do bad things in real life.
Openly did bad things and espoused really bad ideas.
Okay.
But they made really good music that I enjoy. So I'll listen to them forever, you know? So if you start saying like you are only going to consume things from people who have your exact values, you're going to have a pretty small worldview. And then, the people who like the kind of music that I do that say they don't like that band, I don't believe them. So, but, let's see. Who's our last show? Oh, the Odd Man show. That was good.
I had to leave early.
Yeah, we got into some extra good stuff once you left. We talked about this secret society called the Pilgrim Society. And what were we talking about when you left? We were still talking about the CFR and different NGOs.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the CFR are kind of running the show right now, so it'd be interesting to go back and look at some of what... Oh, my wife's FaceTiming me. Hey.
Are you doing a podcast?
Yeah, we're recording right now. Say hi.
Hello.
Love you, bye. Emily's staying over. She takes care of this old lady because her job cut back all her hours, so she found some work taking care of this really funny, nice old lady and helping out her daughter. And they're out of town, so she's staying with her for the whole weekend. And yeah, it's kind of a bummer to not have her and Tweety around. It's just me and the other two dogs, which isn't the worst thing, but I'd rather they were here. Yeah. It's weird when you're married and you just kind of like take it for granted, but like she wasn't home last night. And like, I just stayed up and watched YouTube prepper videos until 2 a.m. I haven't been awake at 2 a.m. since I stopped working at the bar, like 5 or 6 years ago, you know? So I definitely need her to like keep some form of structure in my life. You know what I mean?
It's really nice. Any change of energy in the home, like if Eric goes somewhere, please go somewhere.
Yeah.
it's nice to miss him. It's really nice to miss him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I miss Tweety. Yeah, I like coming home and seeing him, what outfit he's wearing that day. I used to be so anti dog clothes, but he's pretty cute in his little outfits. So.
Oh man, he is a little model. He can pose for pictures.
Yeah. I think he's a miniature pincher.
That's what he
maybe
looks
not
like
100%, but mostly. And he's staying over with Emily and the old lady, and they have a full size Doberman pincher that's named after David Bowie, who may also be somewhat of a sketchy character.
David Bowie, I'm sure.
Yeah. But great musician. Yeah, what else? Yeah, so I watched a bunch of prepper videos, I think. Oh, you know what I'm doing after this podcast?
No, what are you doing?
At 2 o'clock, I'm going on with Dean Reiner on Up Is Down. He asked me to come on, which I'm really excited about because I haven't been on his show yet. So he's talked about us a lot and he's come on ours a few times.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go and talk about some people. We're gonna talk about QAnon stuff and how there's people still clinging to it, even though it's, in our opinion, mostly BS, you know? There's mm-hmm. still people that are saying Donald Trump's going to be president on March 4th, da 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 da, and it's pretty ridiculous. So I made, on the Resistance Chronicle last week, I made the announcement, I'll make it here as well. If Donald Trump is the president on March 4th, I will drink a warm cup of my own urine on our podcast.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So, yeah, I guess we'll hope that nothing happens. I think I'm pretty safe.
Okay. I hope so. I really do.
But yeah,
on all levels.
We're listening. A lot of these podcasts are having these people on still that are going around and talking about the stuff that they have no evidence for. And they have these like same guests make this, like they're on the circuit, you know, and they come on to people's shows and they're sort of entertaining because they talk crazy. And they have a funny way that they talk, or like they're good speakers, but they never bring any receipts. And it just sucks. They just like keep, it's what they did for the whole 4 years with Trump, with the QAnon stuff. They just, some of the like little stuff would come true, but they make these big projections that are like broad and non-specific, and they'd say wait till da 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 this date, follow this, you know, like weird numerology stuff, and it wouldn't happen, and they would just keep kicking the can down the road, you know, to the next thing, like, oh, and then say, oh, you got to trust the plan. That was like the big saying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think that makes it seem pretty obvious that it's like a government plant type psychological operation that's just meant to keep all these people who maybe would have been more activated to do some like real activism or get out there to just stay docile and subservient and on 4chan, trusting the plan, waiting for the next announcement or the thing to happen, or like, you know, kids to be freed from tunnels underneath Washington, D.C. And it just sucks because it just, it made everything that has evidence and truth to it get lumped into this big grand conspiracy of QAnon. So every people that are on the other side, if you have a different viewpoint like I do, I would get lumped in as a Q supporter, even though I never followed that. You know, I remember when I first heard about it, I think I heard about it from Eddie Bravo, who is one of my heroes in jiu-jitsu and also in the conspiracy world, the inventor of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, which is an amazing grappling system. But he was a big Q guy, and I remember hearing him talk about it somewhere, and I went and I tried to figure out how to look into it, because I was like the first I'd heard about it, and I couldn't figure out how to use 4chan, which is like this like rudimentary message board where all of it started. And it was like mostly people posting memes and people trolling and, you know, doing stuff that would be considered racist just to like get a rise out of people. But I couldn't figure out how to access any of these they call them Q drops, where they would say like follow the white rabbit, and they'd give you a date, like some weird numerology stuff. And but yeah, so I think we're going to talk about that on Up Is Down later today. Uh-huh. So he knows more about it than I do. I'm just going to be there. I'm going to be Deborah on that one, I think.
Do you have any idea? I mean, you said, or maybe I heard you wrong, that the government started it. Do you feel it was an organized? Yeah,
I believe it was like COINTELPRO, PSYOP. Like, I think it was used to keep people docile.
Uh-huh. Or distracted from what's really happening.
Yeah. And I also think it was used to root out the people that might be, you know, dissidents. And now they know exactly who all those people are. Same with the stuff that happened on January 6th, you know? So our guest is here, guys. We'll be back in a second. All right, guys, we're back, and we are here with our guest today. He is the creator of Conspiracy Synergy, and he's made a bunch of movies and all sorts of stuff. We got T. Snyder here today, who I reached out to, I think, through, where was it?
It was Union of the Unwanted. I don't remember which episode.
Okay, yeah.
Or no, wait. It was Ricky's 300th.
Yeah, it was Ricky's rants on his 300th episode. So, yeah. Welcome, man. How's it going?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you both. Thanks for taking the time to check my stuff out. And as far as how it's going for me, it's more low-key in Canada. It's more passive-aggressive than it is full-on, like, in your face the way it is in the States. But it's the same old bullshit, you know?
Yeah, same stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. I live in a little suburb right across the border from Portland, Oregon. Uh-huh. And it's like a little bit laid back here, but you know, you still gotta do all the protocols. But if you go down to downtown Portland, it's like I saw a lady wearing a double mask and a face shield yesterday on the street, you know. But it's mostly downtown Portland is mostly homeless people and people working at Starbucks. And all the homeless people are wearing two masks.
Yeah, it's really funny. I actually have made a point of listening to about 4 or 5 different episodes of Deborah Gets Red Pill. So I have overheard some of your different conversations at different times.
Awesome. Which ones did you hear?
Most recently, I listened to the one from, I believe it was your last episode that you put up. So going into the Council on Foreign Relations and all of those kind of.
Oh, yeah, with the Odd Man. That was a good one.
Yeah. And then before that, I made a point of listening to the MK Ultra one. And diving into that kind of stuff, because the next episode I'm going to be trying to do for Conspiracy Synergy is kind of like I'm trying to explain to people how they've been brainwashed without them realizing that they've been brainwashed, which is difficult to do, because most people think if you get brainwashed you're gonna have a memory of that. It's gonna be like, I think I'd remember being brainwashed. You'd be like, no, you wouldn't. You would not remember this, and you would hear about it from a rather strange individual on the internet. And you would have expected it to be some guy wearing a badge or something, but turns out he's in on it, you know? And so it's a very difficult situation to explain to motherfuckers who don't understand that they're up against the CIA. Like, if you're just a Farmer John and it's a Tuesday and you don't think you're up against the CIA, and then somebody knocks on your door and informs you of the fact that, yeah, you are, that's going to be an uncomfortable Tuesday. So it's how do you do that with people in a way that you don't break them down psychologically just getting past the first sentence? So your episode helped me enter into that in a nice rejuvenative way where it's everybody kind of coming to the table and just offering their two cents about what they know about something ridiculously complicated. So it was a really nice episode.
Great.
Well, your first episode that I listened to, Conspiracy Synergy, I was struck by how it was, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like, you know, stuff that I have heard, but you said it in such a non-confrontational way that didn't make the audience feel like, oh, gee, I'm stupid for not knowing this already. So I'm going to share it. I'm definitely going to, you know, send it around to people I know because it's...
Do you think that's a big part of the block of people being receptive to any of this is because maybe if like, I try not to do it, but it's really hard and we're going to talk, I hope we get to talk about this on the show. It's really hard to like not get animated with people who it's hard to start telling people about conspiracies when you've been steeped in it for a long time because it's everything, you know, that everything's connected and like everything eventually is going to lead back to like Paul Benassi. And like, I can't tell you about one thing without you previously understanding anything. So maybe I'd start, I don't do it, but people would start like yelling or getting mad at people.
Yeah, I've been there. I think we've all been there at one point, even if we don't do it, we've done it. Or at least I have, speaking for myself. Yeah. And not yelling, but being like overly confrontational in a way in which you're trying to like insist that they understand at least kind of where you're coming from. That's my experience of it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I'm at now is I'm not talking to anybody about anything, you know, like unless you come and ask me, I'm not wasting my time with you.
Yeah.
Eddie Bravo brought that up about a year ago. He's like, you know what? I'm not here to argue anymore. Like I know what I know. And if you're interested in it, let me know. And you know, I relate it to, I know I keep bringing this up. I guess it happens when you start pumping out a lot of episodes, but I got sober in AA and like, you get so involved in that. You don't realize that like when you're talking about it to people who don't understand what the hell you're talking about, you're like quoting stuff out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but you like if one thing is the biggest part of your life and it's kind of foreign to other people and you start like talking about it, it's like a abrasive to them, or they don't know where you're going with it. So
yeah, that's really true. There's a language that comes with every world and it's kind of diversifying our, I guess, it's a really interesting insight what that brings with it and what we think other people know and understand about it, but maybe they just don't realize that yet. And so there's this huge emotional thrust on our side of it. And to them, they're kind of just like, I don't know how to cope with all that emotion. And we're also traumatized at the same time right now for different reasons. We're all coping with it in different ways. And then that means that every one of us coming from a different world that has that different language that comes with it, we're all missing those emotional connections, which is interesting because that's what we're seeking the most, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, I'm making fun of this fat woman who's wearing two masks and a face shield in downtown Portland, but she's doing that because she's genuinely terrified that the air is poison, you know? And like, I'm judging her as hard as I can. I don't, when there's a crosswalk and I see people wearing a mask outside, I don't stop for them anymore. But one of the big questions I kind of want to get in with you is like how to like ease people in, but also what, so Deborah is, you know, she's halfway there. She was not anywhere close to being even started when we first started.
Yeah.
And she is receptive to all of it and able to hear about it. Sometimes she'll get mad, but not very often. And even if she gets mad, it's like, she's like, oh, that kind of upset me, but I'm not mad at you. I don't dislike you now. Why do you think, even though that the world that she comes from, why are some people able to listen with an open mind and some people aren't? That's the biggest question I have about all of this.
Well, it's not one answer. It's 50 million different answers, and it's different for every single person. We all try, and as people, find the trends that connect the most, so we can connect to the most people. And if we find those trends, then hopefully we're able to reach out in a significant way. What I think has happened is that our world has been manufactured in the likeness of things that we would intuitively find important or valuable somehow, but aren't actually. And so it's like that scene in the beginning of Indiana Jones where he's swapping out the treasure for the thing that he's carefully weighed out to basically be that treasure. That's kind of the situation where it's so far as like the reality that has been built for us is a carefully crafted likeness of what is actually valuable to us. And many people are walking around of the impression that they're far more okay than they are, or they're far more balanced than they really are, but really that boulder is going to trip any minute and we're all in for it when it does. And that's a very uncomfortable position to be in, an uncomfortable position to admit to yourself, an uncomfortable position to admit to anybody else. And so what it creates is a leveraged sort of hierarchy of social pressure that we all fall in line with, because we don't want to be seen as, or to be revealed as, the weak link in a chain in a very complex situation designed to keep us in chains. So it's this whole back and forth circular thing that we're all caught up in. And that's why it's so effective, because it's a motion of things in tandem with one another that collectively forms our binds.
Yeah. How do you feel about it, Deborah?
Well, I mean, you said it pretty well. It's psychologically, it's very threatening to admit to yourself or to anybody else that what you have been brought up to believe your entire life is not really what's going on, that there's a whole other world behind the curtain that we have no awareness of. And excuse me. It's like you have to restructure your whole self. And that's not an easy thing. And it's not a welcome thing. You know, I don't want to do that. I'm very comfortable with believing, you know, that whatever it is that I believe. I kind of tiptoe around it. I said once before that I'm straddling the line because I'm receptive to hearing everything. You know, sure, I'll hear it. I'll listen to it. I might digest it and I might regurgitate it, but I still am kind of in my quote unquote normal life, going about my life with the other people in my life, keeping it to myself. I don't know if I'm saying that very clearly, but
that was perfect.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you mean.
Deborah's friends have expressed concern because they think she's being radicalized.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that the other day. So if your friends think you're being radicalized, Deborah, do they think that I'm a radical?
Yeah.
Like, well, so do you think they'd put me in a camp?
Oh God, no. But yeah, they think I'm being influenced. Yeah, I am being influenced. Aren't we all? I mean, every time we sit down with another person, we're either being influenced or we're in complete denial and not accepting anything that's being said. So,
yeah, I forgot who it was. It was either Michael Malice or Thaddeus Russell. I think one of them said something like, if you can convince somebody that they need to wear two masks and get an anal swab, they're not that far away from killing you because the government told them to.
That's a sickening and scary thought.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, Tees, why don't you tell us a little bit about Conspiracy Synergy and the other project that you have going on?
Well, that's the main project that I'm doing right now. I always have a handful that I'm juggling in a variety of different capacities because I kind of slow cook my creative work. So it takes me between a year to 5 years, sometimes up to 10 or 15 to complete anything. So I'm running different things at the same time. Conspiracy Synergy is a show that I have been doing consistently for the last year and a half now, but it's only been out for about 4 months, 5 months. And that's because it takes a lot of artwork and It's very, very highly edited. And by highly edited, I mean that some sections I have to do my own animations and little kind of like, it takes a lot. It's a very highly edited process. And I'm trying to bring to the community of Conspiracy sort of a simplified variant for total newbies so that anyone who hasn't seen it before can come on board and feel welcomed in it, because it is a highly intellectual, highly detail-oriented, highly combative, confrontative, emotionally cumbersome environment that if you get right down to what the actual sort of description of it would be, it's counter-espionage. And most people are not familiar enough with espionage, let alone with what counter-espionage is in its actual manifestation of understanding how we've been played, who the major players are, what that's building up to, what that agenda looks like, what we're not seeing, what's impossible for us to see, and a whole lot of other shit stacked on top of that. But if you boil that all down to cute little memes, people are down for that. Have a rabbit jump across the screen while you're talking about Project Phoenix, and all of a sudden it's not as bad that they were ass raping people with eels, you know? So there's this whole side of people that we need to be honest about, which is that we want to be welcomed into an environment and into a community. And if it doesn't feel like that, it's more threatening from the ambiance alone than it is from the information at hand. And so that's what the show's about. And that's how I try and present it to people. Because if you can get past the way in which this feels like our lives are at risk, you know, we're like tensing our muscles and our necks up because it's like we're trying to protect our arteries from being bitten by a tiger, that intuitive primal nonverbal that we bring to it, you can just throw that shit in the trash and be like, hey, let's hang out because we love each other. Then people are like, oh, okay, cool. Let's talk about Conspiracy then. Because people want to talk about it. It's just they don't want to feel uncomfortable talking about it.
Yeah. Do you think people want to talk about it just to try to debunk it, or do you think they actually are open to hearing about it?
I think that all depends on how you respond to them. A lot of the time people want to debunk something because they think that that's right. So it isn't even about them wanting to debunk it. It's about them wanting to do the thing that is right and the thing that they see as being right. But that doesn't make it right, but they still see it that way and they still identify with it that way. So you got to change what they see and you got to change how they identify. And that isn't manipulation. It's more the power of clarifying something by harnessing the pre-existing momentum of an entity rather than trying to stop it like a train. You just change the tracks and eventually that thing's going to come around the right way.
Do you think by right, do you mean morally right or like...
Yeah, if I talk about right, I'm only ever talking about morals, because if you get right down to the truth and how that works, it fundamentally is sort of like aligned with morality. So when you dive into natural law, we're ultimately talking about what is morally right, and morality isn't an objective and verifiable thing in accordance with natural law. And so it's like the way I like to describe morally correct for people is math isn't really ours to invent. It's ours to understand. It's ours to reveal as something that is being inherent to nature. The same is true.
Racist.
Yeah, I'm racist against math. That's true. Because I think that it doesn't have a color. It's more any number of digits on a spectrum. But yeah, also the Common Core, like people show, like, tell the audience your joke so I'm not stepping on it.
Yeah, it's just, there's a bunch of videos out this week of like people going on Fox News with like, you know, and it's done to make us people like me or people that watch Fox, not that I'm one of those people, pissed off.
Yeah.
Because it's the girl with the hair, like all to one side of her head shaved, you know, it's the perfect caricature. And she's telling, you know, Tucker Carlson that 2 + 2 = 4 is racist. And that's going to make people go crazy. And it's just... Yeah. It's so like now that I look at that, it's like as soon as I see that, I'm like, oh, that's done on purpose to make people mad, you know. But I mean, so Common Core is so insane, and it's done. It's perfect, you know.
Oh, yeah. They're really good at what they do because they understand how we feel and why we feel it. And so it's like it's just picking up something and bending it. And as long as it bends, they're going to take it to a point that it breaks, you know. And so Common Core, it's like, if you, even me seeing this shit a lot of the time for what it is, I still am just hurt by the absurdity of it, because it should be a better world than that being things that are taken seriously and presented as if they're serious, you know?
Yeah. And, So Deborah, when you see, did you see any of those? I mean, you've been really good at staying off media, I think, recently, mm-hmm. and I commend you for that. Did you have another good week this week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you go on? How many times did you go on Facebook?
I don't know that I did. Wow, I might not have.
Good for you.
I might not have.
Wow. Yeah. So
I'm a lurker there if I go on anyhow.
Yeah. I don't even know. I stopped Facebook like 3 or 4 years ago. So, but I still watch. I look at Instagram. I have both my accounts. I have my personal account and then I have the show's account on Instagram. And then I have the show's account on Twitter. I never had Twitter before we started the show. And I like to go on there and waste a bunch of time. But yeah, they were having, it's just like when they put stuff up there, and it sucks because like at the point where if you're into conspiracies now, the echo chamber that you get stuck in leans pretty right if you just like follow a lot of the normal conspiracy-minded people. And then I get like I also am an anarcho-capitalist libertarian, so I get like that on there as well, which is like fed up with the absurdity of what's happening. But so like, yeah, my feed is a total echo chamber, and it's crazy because before it was an echo chamber the opposite way, and I like actively switched it.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to watch. So what's your felt experience of those apps still, like, because they've gotten everyone into echo chambers? Are you still getting something out of it? Are you getting what you want to out of it?
I mean, I like being able to promote my show on it and just communicate with people and book guests and stuff, you know, and like talk to you on there and stuff. It's easy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but you know, what's the penalty for that ease of use, you know?
Yeah, things are getting weird and additionally covert very quickly. And we're all trying to stay on top of it. But if they come at you every direction, eventually they're going to ping you with something. And it's like, yeah. What's that thing going to be?
Yeah. You know, I'm sure I've on this show and on Twitter, I've done a bunch of stuff that would, if I had a bigger reach, would get me in trouble, you know, but I don't have that yet. So hopefully that's coming.
I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how this whole situation evolves. I guess the thing that I try and, or that I struggle with conceiving of myself with the whole situation right now is how long and drawn out it is. Cause like traditionally the civilian population doesn't think of things in that way. But if it's your job to either go to war or to encourage people to go to war, you only ever see time in that drawn out way. And another set of people that I find see it similarly are lawyers, because that's how long it takes to litigate or how long it takes to build evidence in order to culminate in something. So the very serious sort of pendulum swings of the species is something that we haven't really been in tune with in our own understanding. And it's like, that's the thing that bothers me most, is because I know and understand from having studied them, the time frame that this unfolds in. And it's really difficult to talk to other people about the kind of agenda that they have in place and the time frame that unfolds in. If all everybody's trying to do is just be like, next week it'll be better. It'd be like, when comes the week when you aren't saying next week will be better anymore? And will there even be Twitter left to try and say it when that week eventually comes? And so it's that interesting kind of like, you feel uneasy as the platform that you're on is gradually twisted. And you don't even understand that you're kind of like a ball going down a maze being led into something that you can't really get out of once you're there. And it's, yeah, like, how do you articulate that or explain that to people who insist on only seeing this 1 week at a time when you know full fucking well this is a 4 to 10 to 20 to 30 year agenda unfolding over a sequence of steps hidden by being that ball that goes down that sequence of steps, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long game. Like yeah. On that last podcast I did with Oddman, he brought up the fact that Cecil Rhodes died in 1921, I think. So we're 100 years away. And we're like exactly where he wanted us to be. And it made me think, man, what if they just said 100 years from now,
probably
to honor his death, we're going to make this happen in 100 years.
Yeah. The way that nature works. So the irony of that is like, it could have literally just been some shit they said in jest, like getting around drunk at a fireplace, wealthy as fuck. And then they're still able to just actually make that manifest in nature just because
they put it out there.
I'm trying to figure out the line between what is actually controlled and what is just weird and broken in that way, you know? And that's another thing that I find a lot of people struggle with. And Because it's been going on for so long and we don't know anything about it. And I don't know. I try and share and voice my own frustrations with going through conspiracy, because it's like, don't you find it's just amping up in a felt and heavy manner right now, in a way that it isn't just long and drawn out, but it feels heavier for everyone who knows it and is aware of it at all. Do you feel that personally?
Yeah, I do. How do you feel about it, Deborah?
Well, yeah, it's a huge weight.
Do you think if I hadn't started exposing you to this stuff through the show, do you think it would feel less heavy, like the impending doom of where we're headed?
Yeah, because I didn't have to think about it. No, it's very comfortable living behind. Yeah.
But yeah, that's the one thing that I wanted. Why it's uncomfortable to me to not, I don't know. And I don't even know if I believe it anymore. Like, if I was blue-pilled, would I be happier?
I don't think you can go back you can't unknow something that you know.
Yeah. But am I the kind of person, why am I able to look beyond the matrix, you know, like what? And it's weird. That's the, I'm coming back to that same question again. It's like, why are some people, and it's so arrogant of me to think that I'm, that the way that I think and look at the world is the right way too, you know? So,
yeah. I guess for, yeah, the idea of being able to see past the matrix or to see beyond where other people are, I think that comes back to what I was talking about with time and how it affects all of this and influences it. And that's a really, really big ingredient that we don't really factor into it. And there's the time in the sense of the time that it takes them to plan it. There's the time in the sense that it takes us to figure out what's going on. I guess, like, sorry, my dishwasher is firing off right now. So can you still hear me?
Yeah, you're
I can't
good,
hear the dishwasher. Okay,
tell her to be quiet.
Yeah. Oh, shut up.
Back to the point, the way time works is, like, if you look at a constellation from a fixed axis on the Earth and you're looking up at the sky, you could see where a moon is at a period in time, and that would be what everybody sees. But if you look at the cycle of that in a constellation over time, then it looks like a figure eight. So some people could look up at the sky and see a figure eight because they're just seeing things diluting time in a way that allows them to see how it actually interacts in a larger way. And so, but from the vantage point of people who are just looking up into the sky, seeing a fixed position of the moon rather than where it is, every different point of its axis of rotation, it's very difficult to conceive of there being a figure eight there. So if you can see both that there is a fixed axis and so too that there is kind of just that gravity that takes you from one place to the next, then it's perceiving both of those worlds and understanding that a lot of what we go through now isn't for the sake of anything other than what will come to be later. We just can't see it kind of in that transition of time. And so that's what I mean when I try and understand the line between how this shit works. Is it all controlled in the way in which so many of us gravitate towards? Or is there also sort of like a natural kickback that is intuitive on behalf of the species that offsets that control? And that's a lot of what I personally juggle with and I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. Do you find that you're more confused now than when you started?
No, I'm way more down to basics to understand where I'm coming from with principles and first principles and understanding natural law and then understanding the difference between right as wrong as the pretense to go about there engaging with other people and understanding the various other kind of things that factor into that and how to understand the predicament that we're in. And when you understand the predicament that we're in, you're morally obligated to help other people understand it. And that's the whole idea of red pilling. And that's why it is a thing. It's like, we're not walking around doing this because we want other people to believe what we believe. We're walking around doing this because there are objective truth that can be verified. And that is seminal to the species well-being. So it is a moral obligation that people have. And that's the thing that you need to keep doing. And we have to all do better in a more, let's say, palatable manner. But at the same time, it's like, eventually it's going to come to that point where it's just fucking serious, you know? So it's like, it's a really tough thing where it's like, you also got to give people space and you got to give them their time to come with it. And Deborah, what you've been going through, it's like, you're going through this shit. Like it took us 15 years or longer. You're at like 6 months or 7 months now. That's gotta be just intense to constantly go through. What does that feel like for you? Like if just very, would you recommend your friends go through it that way? Do you think they have a choice at this point? How do you
approach? I don't think, no, I think it depends on the individual. You know, like Adam is able to dig deep and do a lot of research and feel confident in his research and in what he has learned. I don't go that deep. So it's very hard for me to try to explain it to my friends because I don't have a lot of real, you know, I don't have the grasp of everything yet. I have to hear it over and over and over and over again before I can, you know, explain it myself. So I don't know, I forgot what the question was.
Well, that answers it, I think, in a really great way, because it's like the biggest issue isn't even necessarily with the information. It's the familiarity enough to be able to, connect with other people when you're talking about it. And It's really interesting to see all those connections uprooted, but you seem like a very personable person who's able to make those connections very well. And it's interesting that you watch my show and you thought that was something you could share with people in order to be able to help them understand some of the things that you're talking about. Because it has been framed in like a very scary light for all of us. And overcoming that fear. So how are you at overcoming fear? Is that something you're good at?
I don't know. How are you at overcoming fear?
I'm pretty good at just being an idiot about it. I'm not very good at like overcoming fear and being nice and palatable in a bedside manner. That's more something I can do creatively, but it's like, I think that's something that's like mothers are very good at, you know, it's like they need to do it in a nurturing way. And, you know, so just the idea of all of us kind of finding our skill sets and understanding what those are and coming together without necessarily stepping on each other's toes. Because it's like, how do we organize in response to the situation that we're in rather than just simply feeling the hardship of it? And I think a big part of that is returning to our roots. So the idea of this feeling like something that is uprooting us, it also gets our wires crossed, you know? All of a sudden you're not the same place anymore and it's very easy to cross those wires. So it's like, what I'm trying to do is figure out what my skill sets are, how can I apply them in a relevant way to help other people who can then also apply their relevant skill sets in a way to help other people. Because it's like, you'd be able to talk to your friends. If I say a bunch of shit, they might not understand or appreciate what I'm talking about. But you, your unique voice, that's very powerful. So I kind of just want all of us to remember how strong each of us are in our own way and how we don't have to be strong in the way that someone else is. We just have to contribute what we got.
It's good life advice.
Yeah. On a previous episode we did a long time ago, I called it truth triage. And it's just like you have from what I've seen, you have to treat it as there's some people who can be helped and some people who can't. But hearing you guys say what you just did, maybe somebody that I can't help, Deborah can.
Bingo. That's how it works.
Like,
and once we understand that, holy shit, we unlock the whole thing.
Yeah. If I talk to my mom about any of this stuff, it wouldn't go well. You know, like she would just shut off and like walk away or change the subject just because it's so uncomfortable to her. But I think, I don't know. I think she might be too far gone. But I think if Deborah talked to her about it, she would either think that Deborah's crazy and change her opinion of her or be into it. So you never know. And that's the scary part too.
Okay. So the advertisement number is that you have to see something 6 times before it'll even appeal to you once. Maybe. And that's what I mean. There's the synthetic variant of reality that they try and create and obscure our perspective, which is what the blindfold is a metaphor for and what taking that off means. And then there's the reality of it, which is that maybe we need to see something 6 times before it registers once. And maybe that's why their synthetic version tastes so good, is because it's pretty damn close to the reality a lot of the time. It's just missing that little luster. And so like maybe the idea of describing people as too far gone, I can empathize hugely because I have the same conversations with my father and my stepmother and they're just not there. So I try and find what is a voice that you can hear to even understand what I'm trying to communicate. It's very difficult. because I think ultimately it is a relationship that they need, not just a voice. And that that sort of relationship is something that we all already have. We sort of just have to find the courage to return to in a real way. So I empathize a lot with the idea of thinking of some people as if they're too far gone, but maybe they just need to hear it five or six times from someone who isn't you before, when you say it, it'll click and it'll be true.
Yeah.
You got to keep coming back.
Yeah. So Deborah, you had one friend, I won't say her name, but she was listening to the show on a pretty regular basis in the start and was maybe a little bit, was more open-minded than the rest of your friends and family, right? What, how is she still listening, or how is she feeling about, how is she feeling about some of the stuff we've been talking about? Has she changed any of her opinions or thoughts?
I don't think so. However, I mean, she's listening. It's sweet. She's so supportive of me, and she gets upset when she thinks that I'm being tag-teamed or whatever. Is that the right expression? But she hears it. She hears it. What? Did I say
you're perfect.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. She's got an open mind. We talk about it just about every week. So,
What episodes has she expressed anger or being like more upset about?
Yeah, Stacey Abrams.
Oh yeah, we did. We had Monica Perez come on and Brad Binkley because they're from Georgia, and they told us all about Stacey Abrams and how she's a created person and all her nefarious past and her membership to the CFR and the Aspen Institute and all that stuff, and how she's been bred for her role for her whole life. And I'm glad we shattered that. Did it change her view or just upset her?
No, I think she could take in the information and apply it. And kind of like me, I can take in the information, I can apply it, but I can still, like, I still voted for Biden, you know?
Yeah. But since you voted for Biden, we've had guests on and they've made you come to the conclusion that democracy isn't a legitimate form of government, or of,
we're not
of,
the good
nothing's
guys.
A legitimate form of government, but so
I think, go ahead. I just think that when she and I can sit down and talk about it, which I, like I say, we do just about every week, it's good. It's good for me to talk to her. It's good for her to, you know, give me her opinions. That's the way you really get the meat of everything, is when you can sit and have a back and forth. And you know, she's not teaching me, I'm not teaching her. We're learning from each other just by sharing the information.
Got it.
But that she's a special case, you know, because she's like me. She's receptive to hearing anything.
Yeah.
You know, what's the harm in hearing a different opinion? Why is that? So, I mean, I get it. This is a big deal. This is a huge deal. But when I like you, Adam, don't understand how people completely just want to shut down and say, not going there.
Yeah. The first time I ever kind of interacted with Tees was when they asked me one time to go on Union of the Unwanted. It was pretty cool. Haven't been invited back since, but, as Sam Tripoli says, I learned early on, I'm not one of the cool kids. but he asked me a question that I thought was really a good question and a good idea. He said, would you ever consider having someone on and having Deborah try to convince them or tell them about something?
I don't have.
Well, the basic premise I was getting at is that that's sort of the thing that eventually happens is when you just try and communicate this information to another person and not have them think of you as crazy. That's one of, because you actually have to understand it. It's not even really about convincing someone else. It's just like, okay, so this person who was verified to be a person was here, who was verified to have been here. Here's the document. It's like basically presenting what would be admissible within a court of law. And if it isn't done in a way that would be admissible in discovery, then people are going to, in their own mind, discover that it's a load of crap. Doesn't matter if you're actually telling the truth. If you're not saying it succinctly and well, it's not going to be the truth. It's going to be some crazy shit that you're sputtering out because you don't actually understand it.
And I would not be doing it succinctly and well.
Yeah. So the comfort that comes from that is like, oh man, I've been doing this for a long freaking time and I've been trying to talk to my parents about it. And I guess that's been one of the major educational experiences is them always having questions that seem to like just tilt your boat. It'd be like, hey, here's this thing. And they'd be like, oh, I'll just tip it this way ever so slightly. Have you read this article? It'd be like, no, I haven't read that article. So I have to go read it. And then I come back to them and all they have to do is tip the boat again. They don't have to actually accept anything you're saying. As long as they throw a wrench in the gears of what you're driving at them, that's good enough. And eventually you pull up to them in like this fucking Air Force armament of a variety of different convergent things where it's like, look, it's real. And I wish I knew how to do it in a way that was light and didn't feel that way. So Deborah, is that anything you think you might be able to discover, if not the full armament of how it would be presented within a court of law, then just sort of the emotional side of it where it'd be, but that is so important because that's something that I don't think I'd be as comfortable doing. And so it's like, if you adopt that voice, it's powerful and it travels, you know?
Where does one start?
I think it's really
so big.
Yeah, it's under, like, this is what I created my show to do, was to simplify a lot of it. So you can just be like, okay, here's here's 40 different conspiracies in one episode very, very quickly to give you a big picture perspective. And then if you want to dive into any individual thing because it seems too unrealistic, here's 13 hours on Iran-Contra or something. You know, it's like you give them the resources, you can get into it. But insofar as those broad brushstrokes, most of how news is communicated and expressed, it is in those broad brushstrokes. We don't hear most news from the news unless we're a news junkie. For the most part, we kind of just like hear it from other people. We're like, oh my God, did you hear that? And then we're just like, oh wow. That came with an, oh my God, it was spontaneous. That's news. I'm going to go, oh my God, someone else and tell them about it too. That's most of how news travels. And so it is in those broad brushstrokes that if we can, or I've tried to formalize an experience that gives people that without it feeling really awful first, because I really do think that people want to know the truth. It's just wrapped in so many lies and we've all been turned so backwards so many ways that it's difficult to use your heart as a compass if you're underwater going 90 miles an hour in any which direction any day. So, that's what I try and hope anyways. Like your voice to me sounds powerful and how you can use that to reach out to people in an emotional way as you increasingly grow comfortable through the process that I just described. Because it takes time to do that. But I think compared to where you were when you first started out, you're doing extraordinarily well. And more every day, that thing that didn't seem like it was there at all before very quickly becomes a power at your disposal. You know, so practice makes perfect, that kind of thing.
I have my answer to this question, but I'll ask you, what if you have anything specific or if you view it more of a broad lens, what do you think is a good starting point for an upper class liberal boomer to start dipping their toes in?
It's highly specific to the individual. Everyone has their own interests. And so it's almost like you got to find out what's important to them and then show them something similar to it in a way where they would be curious. And you almost can't tell them the conclusion because it's something that's more important to them if they reach that conclusion on their own. So it's figuring out the person and then appropriately curating to that person something in the approximation of their pre-existing realm of reality so that it can be expanded of their own volition. That's my idea.
Got it. Because Deborah was really receptive to 9/11 being an inside job.
Okay.
And Deborah, is there anything that we've gone over that you think is still totally no way that it could be real?
Well, I guess the closest thing would be the flat earth stuff.
Got it. Anything geopolitically? David Weiss does make a good case, though.
He makes an excellent case. Not that I can think of.
How about Franklin? Did you believe Franklin's scandal?
Yeah, I believed it.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one to break somebody in on.
Yeah, and it I can sort of compartmentalize, like, yeah, these people were involved, but I can't believe that these people were involved, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think a good one for you to, I'm not saying you don't need to start red pilling your friends if you don't want to. I'm not doing it to people unless they talk to me about it. But I mean, an easy way for you to broach the subject, because you guys are all super old, is that you could talk about JFK, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, because if you say to most people, like, what do you believe the official narrative of JFK? They're like, of course not, you know? And then you're like, oh, okay, well, so you believe that the CIA or some government entity had a hand in it. And then you can bring up, like, well, do you think that as soon as they got JFK out of there, they're like, okay, that's all we needed to do and just stop there?
Hell no.
I think, and it's scary to, like, start doing it, because, like what T said about tipping the boat, it's just like at the end of the conversation, all somebody has to do is say, like, well, I don't believe you. Or people say, like, where's your evidence? And if you don't come with a notebook full of stuff, and that's Charlie Robinson does a really good job. He talks about how he brought up 9/11 with his wife's family at Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah, and like ruined Thanksgiving and had like what made sense to him in his mind, but he couldn't get it out in a way. He didn't have his shit in order, to put it lightly. And then like that, like kind of like the humiliation and the awkwardness and like everything of not being able to present an argument that he knew was totally right, just sent him down the rabbit hole of research. And now, like, I know the way that people like you and Charlie and other people like look into and do real deep research. Like, that's not, I haven't had the time to do that. And I don't have the patience at this point. I listen to a lot of podcasts and I know a little bit about a ton of stuff, but I don't have like one specific thing. And if I'm trying to argue my point with people, I get kind of caught up in the same thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I can't have a vaccine debate with somebody because I don't have all the receipts stored in my head, you know, and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that's where I'm not like my training. I'm a self-trained writer and I've been to film school. And so that's where the artist, and I'm a self-taught artist in a number of different ways, but in some form is like formal training. I dropped out of college 3 times because I always hated it. And I thought it was a stupid factory to rob you and pretend that you're getting something for it. And that was sort of my felt experience, but I continuously gravitated back to it. So what does that say about me? So I didn't make it in that world and I wasn't able to thrive in that world. And a lot of that was because of the formalized bureaucratic structuring that came with it and how everything needed to be custom tailored to a professional in a particular manner in strict accordance with whatever the vernacular language that comes with that particular specialist and specialty might be. And I'm all like, that's stupid. Why can't we just talk to each other as people? And then all of that stuff will come out of the lush interactions of one another as people. So it seemed counterintuitive and backwards. And I bring to the conversation, in my own felt sense, not necessarily the full depth depth and scope of research that comes from each of those kind of like formal disciplines and their manifestation, be it within the academic kind of realm or outside of it altogether. Instead, I'm just a creative and playful motherfucker who disagrees with a lot of stupid shit that's been done in a very stupid way. And so I just come out and I'm all like, all right, all these other people way smarter than me have come up with way better answers than I ever would. I'm just going to go over that for about 15 years until I seem smart too. I'm actually kind of dumb. And then I'm going to go talk to other people and be like, hey, I seem smart too. It's actually these smart people over here. And I'm kind of dumb. So here's a bunch of funny stuff to look at while I tell you about the smart people. And then hopefully we can bring those worlds together so that everyone who's dumb will also be kind of smart and we can all be better for it. So the whole idea we have in our mind that you got to be all of this, no, you just got to be familiar enough with how other people are to be able to figure out how you can jive along with them without, you know, once again, stepping on each other's toes.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been at it for that long. You know, I woke up around 2015 based on the election, the Democratic primaries woke me up to like all the funny business that was going on. And at the same time, I kind of found anarchy. And so like, I think that it was a perfect match for me because I could see what was going on in the political world. And that like made me not believe anything that any of those people say. And then seeing that the media was the mouthpiece for them. Like it woke me up really quickly. So you say you've been at it for like 15 years. Can you put your finger on the one thing that got you going?
Well, for me, it was basically just the film Zeitgeist. And I remember watching that and I'm just like, there's actually a lot of truth to this. I need to look into this further. I wasn't at the point, because the end of Zeitgeist, basically, for those who haven't seen the film, it concludes with the premise that centralized bankers are more or less behind it all. And I knew nothing about finance or currency creation or anything at that point, it being fiat and all these kind of things. So I kind of took that as like, all right, well, I don't know about those conclusions, but there's a lot of interesting stuff in here that it behooves me to dive into. And what I found most peculiar about that was I wasn't able to talk about it with other people because it would automatically make them so uncomfortable that they wouldn't even be able to engage in the premise alone. And so that was very striking to me because I remember watching the towers come down. And as the tower fell, my jaw dropped. I'm like, that shit is not supposed to happen. Whatever the fuck just happened, whatever that was, is not supposed to happen. But my dad was kind of around and it didn't bother him. So I'm there with my jaw dropped and everyone else is kind of just unfazed. So there's a significant discrepancy between the felt sense of reality that is punctuated in a way that so for some of us, it's like woken up. Others were sort of just kind of in this daze of what the fuck a little bit sooner. And I think for me, that was triggered by the compulsory school system. So even building up to the idea of me being suspicious of 9/11, on a very early age, I identified school to be like a torture factory. You know, it's like, it's there to crush you. That's what it's there to do. And so it's like, when we talk about the rabbit hole, we always talk about like the individual themes that wake us up, you know, but maybe if it goes back to something in childhood, that could explain the discrepancy between where someone is in their felt sense of reality at a particular moment and how long it takes them to wake up. And once again, I do this all the time, but bring it back to the idea of time. What life is sort of a cooking process. So you could think of like the kernels of popcorn, each of them popping off, you know, it's like, that's what, how I see the whole thing is like, some of us have been in the fire for longer and they're going to pop off a little bit sooner. Some of them aren't going to necessarily do it in the best way, but it's like, for me, the issue that set me over was something I was already in. And I'm wondering right now, the situation that we're all in because of COVID, maybe this is the thing that makes that popcorn pop off a little bit faster. And maybe that's the feeling we're all feeling. At least I'm trying to hope that that's the case. You know?
Do you see it as being a mass awakening or... Yeah.
I see it as an extremely fucking uncomfortable awakening to the darkest shit imaginable. And like people, everyone expects to come out of like some Sleeping Beauty yawn of like, hey, this is great. No, there's going to be like a demon screaming in your face and you got to like run for a little bit. It's like being born as a deer. You got to be born standing because otherwise the wolf's going to get you. That's more of where we're coming out as a species.
So do you feel like more people are going to be woke up or defiant in the near future than people that are going to stay docile?
I think the way that it works, and we're all feeling it in this felt intuitive way, we're being torn apart based on those sort of initial distinction of where we are at within our own popping off as popcorn in the gradual turning up the heat of, as a species.
Yeah, the slow boil, right?
Yeah, exactly. Boiling frogs kind of perspective. And that kind of in the past has manifest and been sort of, yes, engineered, but also sort of ushered and guided in one direction or another, in a way that people weren't actively able to put the pieces together or sufficiently communicate with one another. And so the onus is really on us in a big way to reach out to one another, people using our own individual skill sets. And that's the thing that's going to determine how this scale tipped, whether it's a great awakening or whether it isn't. That's on us, you know? And it's like going out there and doing that in a big way. And it's like, we're all so used to the idea, look at all the super men or super villain or everything is super now, that you have to be super to do anything. No, you don't. Like, there's an American hero is Paul Revere. That's a guy who got on a fucking horse, went town to town and made a lot of noise. It helped that he was a sociable, nice guy about it, because actually there was another dude going another direction who didn't really convince anybody.
Because that guy was the town dick.
Yeah, basically. So it's like, number one, don't be the town dick. Number two, go tell people about important stuff and encourage them to do the same thing. And then it's the Great Awakening. That's it. That's where we're at.
I'd be curious to know if there's any, you know, social group, like grouped by age or demographic or whatever, that is more inclined to be woke.
I don't know the research literature. It's a curious question to see what their exposures are and what their influences are. And yeah, also by age and all the other, it'd be really interesting. I don't know. If there are any statisticians out there, please jump on conspiracy research. We need more of it.
How old? You seem like you might be a little younger than me. How old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay, I'm 41. So we're pretty much the same. Maybe the boomer generation is going to be harder to reach because more apt to believe the mainstream media because they come from a time when that's all there was.
Yeah, that's part of it, definitely.
Sorry to interrupt, but like Vietnam War, I mean, that was a story we were all given, and yet a lot of the young people didn't buy it. And what happened to them? I'm them.
Yeah. They're all wearing two masks right now. but yeah, so like, and then the generation behind Tease and I, maybe the people that are what's below millennial. Well, you're not a millennial either. Are you? You are a millennial.
I think so, but yeah.
Maybe a little younger than him. Never, don't really remember the world pre-9/11 or pre-internet, you know? And I'm kind of the last generation of kids that were like allowed to go do stupid stuff and make mistakes and be at home alone when I was 9 years old. But I know we have feet in both the old and the new. So maybe that's a demographic that would be, you know, reachable because they can see, I don't know.
Maybe. I agree. Insofar as like, it's difficult to enter into that territory of cross demographic swings, especially as things evolve and progress at the pace that they do, and we're all sort of segregated within our own echo chamber communities. It makes it more difficult to form collective bonds in a community if you're all obviously segregated and separated. The idea of reaching through to that demographic, I do think that my show would be okay for it, but even then it's long, you know? So what do you do about someone who doesn't have an attention span?
Yeah.
An attention span for what you need to pay attention to. That's a serious problem, you know?
I can listen to podcasts because I can go like do work and stuff while I'm listening.
Oh yeah, you're going to get up to speed so fast.
I can go mow the lawn. But yeah, if I'm sitting down watching something on TV, I can't go 4 or 5 minutes without checking my phone or something, you know, unless I really try.
Yeah.
Or if I put it in the other room. So, I mean, I'm just as guilty of that as anybody else. And I've been really bad with media lately just because because this show has gotten like a little bit more attention, and I've been on some other people's shows and stuff. So I'm like constantly checking to try to get those dopamine hits to like see people like somebody, or see if they retweeted something of mine, or somebody posted a tweet of me on their show, how many people liked it. And, you know, are there any comments saying how much they like Deborah and I, you know? So,
well, that's true. It is a dopamine hit. I guess the thing that we need to do, all of us sort of on an individual level, and also in a more broad sense within the community, is to really remember that this is about being a movement and about getting moving. And I think that we do have a tendency as content creators to gravitate back to the degree to which our own content is able to get out there and spur conversation. It's going to be really interesting, what I think, to see, because I don't see that as a bad thing. I see that as an important part of trying to create a conversation that you're able to share with other people in order to be able to keep the conversation going. And you guys are a unique pair doing a unique thing. So that's an important part of the process. And the thing that I keep gravitating back to is like, all right, well, we are a movement and we do got to get moving. But what does that look like? And so I'm trying to figure, like, the next episode I'm going to do is I'm going to try and gamify revolution to figure out very simple formulas that you can give every single group of people or town of people or city in order to simply go about fighting the giant octopus that is currently destroying the world in very simple ways, where you don't have to feel like you're a part of a movement, because just as an individual, you can make moves. And we've forgotten that. And it's very empowering to remember that. So the what you're describing, I think that's you making moves. That isn't just an ego trip. It's also a part of what it is to try and tip the ship in our direction, not theirs.
Got it. Speaking of tipping the ship in our direction, I'd love to hear about and have you tell Deborah and the audience about what you've been doing with all the 4,000 individual red pills.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm workshopping. I tried going out and putting, so I'm dressed in a freaking rabbit costume, going out door to door and putting stuff in people's mailbox.
What are you putting in their mailbox? You made 4,000 scrolls.
Yeah. So they're basically flyers that are specially wrapped with a bow around them so that they look like a gift. And it's
did
a very
simple. Did you tie all 4,000 of them yourself?
Yeah, I did. So listen to podcast once again. So you're sitting there doing it. And then also I've got these little red heart envelopes, which have business cards in them that you hand out to try and get people to just go and check out the show. And that's the idea behind it, is just go out there and break echo chambers and just reach out to other people. But the catchphrase that I have for the flyer specifically is, real conspiracy isn't theory, it's our history. And that's built around the idea of everyone's mind automatically goes to conspiracy theory, which is itself thus de facto theoretical. So you have to negate the idea that it's theoretical to return people to the premise that it's actually real. And there's all these stupid mind tricks. But even then, it's not enough to overcome the adversity that we've been meant to feel. So I have to workshop the idea. I've got someone else who's going to be wearing the rabbit suit a lot of the time moving forward, so I don't have to. And they're going to go out there and be more direct with engaging with people, so that there's a felt sense of not necessarily full emotional connection, but of another person being buoyant and light in the presentation of something that feels more personable. And so it's the idea that I'm workshopping is, how can I take these individual red pill scroll things that I've rolled and try and reach out to my fellow man who might otherwise never have someone reach out to them? Because that's sort of where we're at right now.
What do the scrolls have in them?
All it is just a graphic on the front of my COVID-1984 artwork with a bunch of rabbits behind it. The beginning of the tagline on the end is Red Pill Rabbit, who's the mascot that I use for my show. And just the graphic of, it's a black and white template back and forth, which is symbolic for base consciousness. And so it's also utilizing a lot of symbolism and other elements of design, not just aesthetic, but so too meaningful. So I'm trying to encapsulate meaning within the encapsulated red pills, which themselves encapsulate the idea of what a pill itself is. So it's those iterations of approach to the artistic process that I try and bring to my outreach to everybody. And that's one of the outreaches that I'm doing right now.
That's awesome, man. Have you gotten any feedback from it?
For the most part, it's just been online through Twitter. So insofar as like people directly in the city reaching out to me because they saw me in a rabbit costume. No, some people took my picture, stuff like that. Most people found it pretty funny when you're out doing it. It's going to be curious to see what that process looks like as I have my friend do it, who's much better at being a clown in a rabbit suit than I am. That's not my specialty. I have been a puppeteer in the past. So if I had it on one arm, maybe it'd be all right. But me walking around in it, you can kind of tell. It's like, this dude is not happy to be in a rabbit costume right now. You know,
you could do like puppet shows at the park for the children, red pill the children.
Yeah. Don't drink the water. Yeah, that guy.
Does wearing a rabbit mascot head count as a mask?
Honestly, I think that it does. Like, the idea of briefly was if I had to take the bus at some point, I could just put that bullshit on. Just like have a freaking scroll in my hand and like lean towards people, you know, just like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it counts. I don't know. I won't wear a mask personally, but where I am, that's something that I can be afforded by avoiding places and sort of just being defiant in the few places that I go, but it's different everywhere.
Yeah. I was able to do that for a while here. There's a Safeway right by my house and I could kind of get by, and then all of a sudden I couldn't, you know, they got under new management or something like that. And, I got followed throughout the whole store and just kept going and shopping. And I thought I had it. I went to the self-checkout line and they wouldn't let me check out, you know? So
You need a flash mob. You just got to start organizing those locally.
I know people that are doing that. And from the videos I've seen, like of David Rodriguez, he does it in Santa Cruz, California. I don't know, man. I don't think it does anything positive, really.
Yeah, that's fair. So then you got to workshop.
I think you just get labeled a QAnon person and get labeled as a COVID denying QAnon white supremacist. And
okay, so that right there, that builds up a lot of hostility that you know is going to be on the receiving end. So automatically from the onset, you have to understand that you need to be playful in your approach, right? So mm-hmm. It's like what you could do is you could get everyone to wrap their heads fully in toilet paper and then wrap their bodies in toilet paper so they're all mummies. And then you could just go shopping fully masked with so little stupid playful. If you bring that kind of thing to it, maybe they'll label you as crazy. That's going to happen anyway. But yeah. if you have a sense of humor about it, it's a different kind of crazy. And if you're encouraging about that, then hopefully we can use that sense of humor to overcome the absurdity and the insanity. Because it's like we're not going to get out of them thinking we're crazy. That's not going to happen. So how can we go with it in a way in which maybe we can make some people smile on their side? You know, it's like that's what I try and think about in response, because I feel that shit too. It's like you go out there, it's a felt sense. You feel accosted by them feeling accosted. It's an awareness that we have as people. So it's like, how do we think out of that box and to be able to stand on top of it, that, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's definitely good advice to like think outside the box and just, you know, I mean, go entertain yourself as well while you're doing it. But so
it's something I struggle with. I try to figure those answers out, and I think we're all trying to figure it out. And it's I wish I had the right answer. I think basically we just got to try shit, you know? It's like we don't have to have it right. We just got to be trying and then make it right as we go, maybe. Maybe that's a better approach.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with it as much as everyone else is. It sucks right now, you know, for everybody in a big way.
Yeah. What do you think, Deborah? What would you do if you saw a bunch of mummies shopping at the Nugget by your house?
Be entertained.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would be convinced otherwise. I mean,
oh, I agree.
But it would be an eye opener.
Yeah.
Then how do you you got to get your message out there. So
liar have on hand. If people are looking at you, you can always just give them something that's Egyptian themed or is particularly preposterous in its own right. There are iterations to experiences. We like to think that the experience is what happened. A lot of the time, this experience is what happened just after it happened or the way in which you reflect on it later. So it's more to do with our felt sense of what an experience is and getting rid of that and evolving that to something where we bother to push past the feeling like we failed. Because maybe you didn't. Maybe you succeeded in a little way that'll add up later. You know? And it's 'cause I experienced that a lot. And that's actually, I think, is the biggest dampening factor that I experience as an individual doing outreach and I see as other individuals experiencing, is that we've all been taught that if you fail out of American Idol, you're never going to be shit, which is kind of absurd because one, why would you audition for that show? And two, why would you stake your stake as a human being in the outcome of it? You know? So it's like where we all know the people in our lives that are those heroes, you know? And it's like, I swear to God, I just want to reach out to the people who I know are heroes and see them come together right now. I want to hope that having a sense of humor and a feeling of love will be the right ticket to get there. but it's different for everywhere because I've also been fighting with my family a lot lately, you know? And it's like, I'm sure you're all feeling the same thing. So it's like, we know there's a direction we need to go, but when you're in a maze, it's like sometimes you almost have to go the other direction to be able to get to that place. And so it's also a whirlwind sort of experience. And that's kind of my, just sharing my own felt experience of the whole thing and what it feels like to try and be an outward activist in a climate that is full of antagonists who you know you're going to be hated by. So fuck it. Why not just stop being hurt by that and try and be playful instead?
Yeah. I'd rather be hated than ignored.
Yeah.
Let me ask one more question, then we'll get out of here. If you kind of felt somebody starting to feeling like you're getting the wedge in there and starting to crack them, where do you think a good starting point is, whether you get suggested a book, a podcast, a documentary, besides your documentary, what do you think would be a good starting point?
Well, in my first episode, I went over all of the people who I think are the best at what they do, sort of, is getting into this territory. But everyone's list would be different. I do think that James Corbett has a great amount of scope and reach, and so he's a seminal figure in that regard.
That's yeah, because he comes off as really, really believable because he's like a nerd with fantastic research, you know?
Yeah,
I subscribed to him.
Oh, you did?
He was number one on your list.
Oh, Corbett's fantastic. Now, if you haven't watched, it's intense. It's like, he used to more be helping people understand it. Now he's pretty far along where it's like, yeah, he'll mention some shit. He doesn't really hold back anymore. But yeah, check out Corbett. He's great. It's really the question that you're asking is an important one. That's what I tried to do with my show, was to give people a way that they could just use this show here. This is an entry into the entire world of conspiracy. You'll be able to find people, a whole lot of people, in a wide variety of ways very quickly. But again, it's going to be different for everybody. You know, like I like Charlie Robinson's book. I think that the humor would make it so that it would be difficult for some people to appreciate. And that's the truth of everything. My humor would make it difficult for some people to appreciate. So we all have our limitations, and that's why it takes more of us coming on board, understanding how to reach out to the few people that we're able to reach out to, because there are a whole lot of people who have already invested themselves fully to doing this in a professional capacity. Some people, the trick is to start a podcast if in fact there is something you have unique to be able to offer in a significant way in that realm. Other people, it could be just like going out there and distributing flyers or cooking a meal or reaching out to someone who hasn't had anybody reach out to them in a long while. And so the thing that you recommend is whatever that person needs without an agenda that we have to be able to come together as people right now. And that's tough for us to remember as we understand the situation, as complicated and overwhelming as it is.
Yeah.
So that's what really is good it? Advice. Maybe it's a cookie, man. Maybe it's a cookie.
Well, Deborah, what did you think about this conversation?
Very grateful.
Yeah.
Oh, no, thanks for having me on, y'all. It's always fun to talk. Deborah, I appreciate you coming into the know and reaching out to other people to encourage them to do so, too, because that's a very difficult job, and you're experiencing that firsthand.
Yeah.
Tease, where can everybody find you?
Oh, yeah, so I have two websites. My art, because I'm primarily an artist and that's what my history is in, is through teace.ca. So it's teace.ca because I'm in Canada. And the website for the show that I make, which I only put out an episode like every 3 months because it takes a very long time, but you can still check it when it's up. And that's at conspiracysynergy.com. And that's everywhere but YouTube as far as where it streams.
Yeah. And you've been on The Ripple Effect. What other podcasts can people find you on?
I've recorded the one with Charlie Robinson, but it's not out yet. I've been on Corbett a while ago for the short film Blindfold, which the two of you
watch Blindfold, guys. It's on, you can find it.
Yeah, you can find that on my website.
Yeah, okay, I'll probably link to it in the show notes too.
Yeah, a real quick rundown for what Blindfold is. It's basically I created it as a non-confrontational film to be able to help broach conversations about conspiracy with one another, and sort of just a felt shared experience of a family going through their own shit and trying to be able to talk to each other in tough times. So it's a very good metaphor in and of itself. And so too is a metaphor that still stands today for what we're going through now as families and as people. And so that's a short film called Blindfold. That's on my website, which once again is teace.ca. And that's everywhere you can find me.
Awesome, man. I have really, really enjoyed this conversation and I'm really grateful for you. It's kind of a white pill episode, I think. So
yeah, okay.
Cool. Yeah, the white pill's gone way down from what it should be. But so yeah. Support Tees. And guys, thanks for listening. We will be back on Sunday. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Love you all. Thanks, Tees.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Bye.
Yeah.